Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to a sun-drenched edition of the Tottenham Way. London is boiling ahead of the first dark weekend of the season. Ironically, Spurs players have been heading here, there and everywhere. Sonny and Ben Davis appeared to be travelling on the same train to Wales, which was rather nice for the international friendly between their respective nations. I'm Marcus Buckland, and along with Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard, Tom Barkley of the Sun, and Tom Allnut of the Times, I have ventured into the heat of the capital, the very heart of the capital. We're in King's Cross to record the pod and have our annual general meeting, during which time we will ponder what hopefully we're doing right in the podcast and what we can improve upon for your benefit over the coming months. And do feel free to get in touch with any suggestions, requests, or criticisms, as long as they're mild and not directed at me. A fair bit has happened since that wonderful win at Burnley on Saturday. Tom B, you weren't part of the reaction pod to that game. Anything you would like to add there before we get right up to speed?
I just thought it was just a fantastic indication of where Spurs are at already under Ange Postecoglou. They go a goal behind and you think perhaps because they've had a good start, but still there could be teething problems that maybe this might be the end of the honeymoon period. But no, they stick to what they have decided to do right from the off under Ange, and it paid off very, very quickly. And watching the goals back, I mean, it felt like a goal of the season, or at least goal of the month contender for all five of them. And it kind of, which one you like best is a bit of an indication of what kind of football fan you are. Really, for me, I like Son's first goal. Just love that little thing finish. Maybe as a wannabe sort of Sunday league striker, I could just appreciate that finish so much. But the way Madison appears, the pass, I think it was a Porro for Son's hat trick.
It's when every player touched the ball, every outfield player.
But the pass from Porro, I mean, that pass from Porro actually almost sums up the way Ange wants to play. Obviously, as you say, everyone touches the ball, but to have the vision to look up to try that pass, I just don't think that would have happened under previous managers. And it was fantastic to see, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I think if I had to choose my favourite goal, maybe it's a reflection of my sort of clot-hopping personality, but just the Romero finish will be the one that lives longest. I mean, and the fact that it sort of arrows in off the side of the post as well. And I mean, he started the season. We'll talk more about Ange's standout players, Tommy, in a moment. But we did wax lyrical about that central defensive partnership, which already is burgeoning between Van de Ven and Romero. And to me, he looks such a different player already from certainly the back end of last season.
Yeah, I think we all said at the beginning of the season that we knew Spurs would be fun to watch, that you know they would create chances, score goals. But maybe our biggest doubts and reservations were about the defence, that you know that a Postecoglou team, can it be a serious team in the Premier League against the best sides? And I guess one of the biggest surprises so far is we've seen, two clean sheets out of four games and against good teams as well. A back four that is relatively new, goalkeeper that's new. You know, you would be very forgiven if these opening games were conceding more mistakes, more goals than they have. And I think on Romero specifically, we've all said that we know the talent is there, that we know this is a fantastic defender who's got a great reputation across the continent, but he hasn't delivered for whatever reason in the Spurs shirt. And I thought the kind of image of him wearing the captain's armband at the end with Son and Madison and applauding the supporters, that was a kind of almost like a kind of a side of Romero I've never seen before. And I know it's a small thing, but that kind of buy-in almost, that sort of I'm here, I'm Spurs, I'm here with the fans. That was interesting to me. You know, I wonder if that's come from him, whether it's come from Postecoglou, but it feels like maybe the start, let's say it tentatively right now, but maybe the start of a new Romero.
Yeah. Just on that, I mean, you said during the summer, you know, how when I was out in Perth and we did the interview with Romero, and he was pushing back on the suggestion that he prefers playing for Argentina than Tottenham, and that was potentially not, his heart wasn't quite in it. He really hit back on that. And it was good, great to hear, but it's one thing saying it, but he's really backing up with his performances.
I think we give you the credit for that question. I think he had to look inside himself when he heard that. You deserve let's give him a pat on the back here, guys. So it was that little prompter that got him to really think. Of course, he has got to be kept in cotton wool. Van der Ven's got to be kept in cotton wool, because subsequent to the Burnley trip, Davinson Sanchez has gone. Alas for him, his very last contribution in a Spurs shirt was missing a penalty in the cup tie for Fulham. And obviously, he had some difficult moments. I've been pleased, Dan, that actually there's been a lot of nice things said about Sanchez on social media following his departure. He gave us all. Do you remember last season when he came on and then got taken off a few minutes later and everybody booed him? It was horrible. But he deserves to be remembered fondly, I would suggest.
Yeah, well, one of the things I liked about him joining Galatasaray was the kind of outpouring of excitement from Gala fans on Twitter. They're obviously very active. They're the biggest club in Turkey, and they we're all really excited under the announcement tweet about Sanchez joining, saying, welcome to the club, it's great to have you. And I think that's really nice to see, because Sanchez getting booed in the Bournemouth game is one of the more unpleasant and kind of grim episodes, I think, about Tottenham in recent years. It was certainly a kind of low point in terms of mood in last season, which was a kind of generally quite bleak season. So I'm pleased for Davinson. I think he deserves it. I think there's a decent player in there. He was asked to play a system over the last 3 or 4 years that really didn't suit his game. When he was bought for Pochettino, he's pretty good for a year or two in Pochettino's system. And I think he would have done okay in Postecoglou's system. And we saw that in the Barcelona friendly, and we saw that at Brentford on the opening day as well. I think clearly Spurs have taken a punt in selling him. They've taken a punt, as you said, on Romero and Van de Ven staying fit. If either of them gets a significant injury, or God forbid both of them gets a significant injury,
or
then
suspended in the
or still suspended, yeah, quite, then I think the season could hit the rocks pretty quickly, because I think it'll be much, much harder to play Postecoglou's style without them. They're so key, the way they play out from the back. I'm sure we'll sort of touch on Ashley Phillips, but obviously he's incredibly untested at this level. So I think it's a pun, but I think it's also exciting in a way. The one quote from Postecoglou that I keep coming back to is he said, if you want change, you've got to change. I mean, it's simple, but it makes sense. If you want to do different things differently, you can't keep picking the same players that have failed over the last 3 years. You know, it's the definition of insanity, I suppose, doing the same things and expecting different results. So Sanchez is a player we know his time has run its course at Spurs. Sorry, and I think Phillips is a guy who's got a big future at Spurs. So in that respect, we can be excited.
Yeah, just on that issue, by the way, and it's a good one, and Ange is absolutely right, but that also counts when it comes to naming your team for cup ties. If you keep making 9 changes for a cup tie...
You've got to let this go.
I'm letting it go. In a moment, we're going to give Ange points out of 10 for his start, and he's been brilliant, but I don't know how many points he'll lose for that terrible team selection at Fulham. Okay, so Ashley Phillips, the whispers coming out from the club, and you guys have there is much closer to the ground than I do in that regard, is that he's really impressing Phillips in the early days. There's Eric Dyer. There's the possibility of playing Emerson Royale as a central defender, and you've got Ben Davis too. So there are options. If the unthinkable happens and he has to make a change, who would you expect to be given a first chance to take over in one of those central positions?
I think it's an unpopular view right now, and I can understand why, but I do wonder if people are slightly over-exaggerating the demise of Eric Dyer. I mean, it was only about a year ago that we were kind of saying, you know, is he on the cusp of a resurgence? Is this the best Dyer we've seen? Is Conte getting, you know, is he the next Bonucci or whatever it was that Conte was saying? You know, and now we're all kind of claiming he's not even good enough to be Spurs' fourth centre-back. You know, I mean, I can see it, and I take the point that maybe in this system, Postecoglou, you know, doesn't necessarily suit him. Although I don't think Dyer is terrible on the ball. You know, in some people would say he's not a good centre half. He should be a defensive midfielder. I mean, I I think it's fair that the change is required, and I think it's probably a good step in the right direction that Eric Dier isn't Tottenham's first choice centre back. Can he do a job if Romero is suspended for a match? I think he probably can, you know, and I don't think it's a dire situation. I think Spurs would be okay if they have to play him, and I suspect they will address the situation in January.
While I agree with that, I'm trying to get in Postecoglou's head, and I just think it speaks for itself that he's not been in a single squad. Thank you. And the fact that he put Phillips on the bench ahead of him at Burnley is quite damning. But I suppose the question is, if Romero was injured and he needed the right side of his centre-half, is he actually going to play Phillips in the North London derby, for instance, if Romero gets a knock against Sheffield United, or is he going to recall Dier? I think we won't know until that happens, but he's obviously a manager who's prepared to take risks. He's put Udogie straight in, for example. He's put Sarr straight in. I know they're about Udogie. Sorry. Channeling Pleaty there. So we won't know, but the signs just don't look great for Dier.
Well, hang on. Ange, listen, mate. Listen, Eric. It's looking pretty dire, but that seems part of our team. Thanks, Ange. Sorry, see you later.
I'd have my concerns about Ben Davies coming in at centre-back from what I saw in the pre-season. I mean, he's obviously been an absolute stalwart for the team, and I think he could still contribute massively at left-back, but against any team with a sort of centre-forward who's got the kind of power and ability in the air, I think I would worry. I think it was the West Ham game where he struggled in that match in the first half. So I don't know who I'd be more worried about coming out of the team, Romero or Van de Ven, if you had to choose one. But they're both absolutely essential. And just back to Sanchez, it's nice. It's nice that he they sort of gone out in the way he has after what the unpleasantness has done last year.
But with a penalty miss, isn't it?
Yeah. All right.
Way to go.
He was part of the celebrations of at least one of the goals at Burnley as a substitute coming off the
one of Son's goals. Yeah, that was nice.
That's my last. Okay. Memory of
yeah, that was nice.
Better one than the penalty.
You make a good point, but yeah. You know what I mean in terms of the reaction from the supporters. But overall, was it 42 million that he cost back in the day? I mean, he has to go down as a poor signing, right? Over he had a decent first year, from that, and it sort of just speaks to some of the transfers. So we'll get on to a certain other one who's out the door recently soon, but. Of that era, which just didn't cut the mustard. Whereas this season, it seems very encouraging what they've done to.
Just a final thought on Phillips. I was on England duty yesterday and Levi Colwell spoke, and he spoke very well. And he was talking about his difficulties in adjusting in his first season in the Premier League at Brighton. And he said he came up against Ivan Toney and he just realised that physically he wasn't there yet, or he had to improve. And I think that would be my concern with Phillips. He's still not a kind of grown man. He's still not he's still not finished his development. And so you'd be chucking an 18-year-old in at centre half up against some of the best strikers in the world. And I think that's a big ask. And obviously Colwell's only 20. Now he's in the England squad and in the Chelsea team, but he had a loan at Huddersfield. We played almost every game in the Championship. Then he had a loan at Brighton. We played most games in the Premier League. And Phillips seems to me to be kind of a couple of years off that at the moment.
Well, you know, if you've been a Spurs fan for as long as me, you're cynical, you're always extremely pessimistic. And we know the night before the Arsenal game, Romero or Van der Ven will go down with food poisoning and just going to have to make a decision. He'll probably bring in Emerson Royale, who's got a great record in North London derbies, hasn't he? Because he's already had one red card. And I can just see something like that happening. But yeah, I don't want to bring this down. It's a beautiful day and the season's begun fantastically. And linking on very nicely from the point Tom B made about Sanchez, Ndombele. Okay, so 42 million was a lot of money. Was it
79?
55. Ndombele?
I think 55 with add-ons going up somewhere in the 60s.
Oh,
79. Have you got that?
I mean, never mind. They haven't spent any money pretty much for a while before that. But 55 is the number.
Okay,
but
I wasn't
with add-ons. But were any of those add-ons met, I suppose, given how his...
I think with all the fines he's paid for his late arrivals of late, the whole thing's come to 79 million quid. He's off to Turkey for now. Is that the last we're going to see of him?
Oh, he'll be back in a year. Yeah, I mean, there's a purchase option in his deal. It's 50 million euros, so nearly 30 million pounds. But history suggests he's going to be back as Spurs next summer. I mean, he's gone to Lyon. I think they had a purchase option, his former club. In fact, I think that was a straight loan, but certainly Napoli had the option to buy him last year, and neither of them have expressed an interest in keeping him. It's a real shame. I, I used to be a big Ndombele believer. You know, I was really keen for it to work. I was of the view for a while that the managers weren't using him rightly. But when five consecutive managers don't fancy you, then it's not the managers, it's you. And so I really hope the penny drops for him this time and he goes to Turkey and plays in the Champions League and does well for Galatasaray. And hopefully they buy him and we kind of don't have to keep talking about him, mm-hmm. frankly.
Just reflecting, you're talking about Sanchez not being a poor signing overall. I mean, you might remember better than I do. When they signed him, finally splashed, you know, huge money on a player. And he was wanted by all these clubs, or allegedly wanted by these clubs around Europe. But I was under the impression at the time that he was more of a holding midfielder, which is kind of what I thought Spurs needed at the time. Because they obviously had Ali, or Dele, and they had Eriksen, they had Dembele, who was a bit deeper, but more...
I think the idea is that he was the kind of press-resistant eight like Dembele, so not necessarily a defensive midfielder, but right. someone like Bissouma, who could sit deep, kind of resist the press and kind of on. Be a pivot and lead the team forward.
Well, that might make more sense, but... I don't know if that was what they really needed at the time.
None of it makes sense with the non-believe guys. But what I would like one of you to do in your exalted roles as top football writers in the United Kingdom is to get an exclusive interview with Ndombele, because he's hardly ever spoken, I believe, and he gets a bad press, rightly so. I would actually love to hear from the man and for you guys to say, okay, five well-known managers in a row have looked at you and said, no, thanks. You're getting a lot of bad press about your timekeeping and everything else. It would be interesting just to get his point of view, Tommy. Yeah. Can you sort that out with the Times, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be interesting to hear from Ndombele's side, obviously. I mean, I guess, you know, he's had opportunities now at good clubs. You know, this is Lyon, Napoli, Spurs, you know, two or three times, Galatasaray. You know, these are big clubs. And if he really wanted to kind of turn his talent into something more meaningful, then I think he would have done. And I think there's a broader point to be made here about kind of Tottenham's buys in this kind of price bracket where they've signed players. Sanchez falls in there as well. Signed players who are expensive, but also at the same time, not guaranteed. You know, they're not spending the kind of 80, 90 million fees to kind of get someone that you absolutely know is going to go in the team and produce straight away. They're still having to sign these kind of players with asterisks, you know, and we know Ndombele was looked at by three or four other really big clubs in Europe. And they all said, great talent, but, you know, and that there was that but, and that this is the market that Spurs often find themselves fishing in, because they can't compete with Manchester City, with Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. They have to kind of take the asterisk players. And unfortunately, the asterisk players often turn out not to be the talents that Tottenham hope they will be. And that's why historically Spurs have been more successful with slightly cheaper players, slightly younger players.
I wonder if Ndombele will have a late career renaissance like Adel Terabt, because he reminds me of Terabt.
He's still believe.
Terabt had all the talent in the world. It wasn't until I think he went to Benfica and they changed positions that he had started showing what he can do. It's not too late for Ndombele. He's 26, 27, but it's not going to happen at Spurs.
I push back slightly on your point about the price bracket. Even though I agree that Tottenham, when they are spending that kind of range, they're maybe having to gamble a bit more. But then you just look at Lukaku to Chelsea, even Grealish to a certain extent, just because of the price. I mean, I think he's been a good signing for Man City, and I like him as a player, but for that amount of money, I don't think he's been massive value for money. I still think when he
did win the treble last year.
He did, and he was huge, right? But all right, take a look at Chelsea's better example, but I don't think there are that many guarantees even at that level. Maybe it's more to do with
the one thing I would say about that, if you're spending that sum of money, okay, which is not top bracket, and you're looking at a player, you've got to look at his personality more than anything else, haven't you? And if there were that many doubts with other clubs suggesting maybe he's not going to be great in the dressing room, that to me is poor business. You know, you can't gamble with that. If there's a maybe, is he good enough? Well, we're not sure, but he's worth fine because he's a top guy and he's going to buy into it. But if they're, you know, I don't know what he's going to be like if things go a bit sour, I think that reflects poorly on the club. But anyway, he's gone for now at least. Three players who haven't gone anyway. I'll start actually first of all with Hugo Lloris. What's going on with Hugo? He's got a year left on his contract. We've known throughout the summer that he wasn't going to be part of the team this year, and there are all sorts of options, or so it seemed, as to where he could go for a swan song, and he's gone nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think people at Spurs are genuinely a bit confused about what's going on with Hugo, because he had more than one offer in the summer. I believe he had a couple from Saudi Arabia. Fair enough, that's a big lifestyle change, and there are other question marks around moving there, as we know. I think he had an offer from Lazio. Newcastle came in from late in the window. Then obviously his former club Nice came in on deadline day, and he's gone public about why he turned them down, which seemed quite reasonable to me. He said it was too late in the day. I hadn't really spoken to anyone about the project or the vision, and they've got another goalkeeper there who I didn't want to supplant. So that made sense. But to reject kind of five or six offers when you've said you want a new challenge is a bit strange. On the one hand, I wonder if he still feels he can be a starter for a kind of top 20 or 30 club in the world. I think we'd all agree that he's not really there anymore. So perhaps he was setting his sights too high. On the other hand, this is purely speculation. Is he kind of digging in because he feels that the right club hasn't come along and he'd rather move on a free in a year and have more options and have, you know, his pick of clubs and a signing on fee? I don't know. But it does strike me as strange for a guy who's effectively been told he's not going to be in the Premier League squad, so is therefore going to sit out till at least January.
Can I just ask if he is staying? And I, you know, they've got to stipulate the squads, but would he not be better as a number two on the bench to Forster?
There's an overseas player issue, there, I think.
Well, I was just going to say, I was in the press conference ahead of, not the Burnley game, the one before, so there was about a week left of the transfer window.
Bournemouth.
And Ange was asked, because Hugo obviously hadn't moved by then, still hasn't gone, that's why we're talking about it, but he was asked, you know, if he does end up staying, is there a chance that he could be reintegrated? He was pretty definitive in his answer. He didn't sort of name him, but he just said, you know, goalkeepers, there are only certain three spots, we're not going to have any more than that. So it does seem like it's time's up, but maybe, yeah, it is a strange one.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. I mean, it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable because, like, I think Lloris has been such a great servant for Tottenham, captain for a long time, what, 8 seasons, more than 400 games, and we're not kind of used to it because we've had so many managers who, to be honest, been speaking so highly of Lloris when he's been playing badly that you kind of almost feel like it was too much. And now it's almost the reverse. You've got a manager coming in and saying, I want nothing to do with this guy. And you kind of think, well, actually, could he offer something a bit more than maybe you're giving him credit for? I think it's a bit of a shame, really, because, you know, we all like...
If you want to change, you've got to change.
We all like Lloris. And I think it would have been nice to have seen him gone out a bit more cleanly than this. You know, yeah. It almost feels a little bit sour from both sides.
I mean, we talked about Sanchez's last action. Yeah. Lloris's last game was the Newcastle game. And he went off at half time after shipping five in 21 minutes. So, as farewells go, that's pretty bleak.
Well, two other players that we're not going to be saying farewell to for now, at least, are Emil Højbjerg and Giovanni Lo Celso, Lo Celso, who I understand went off at half time in the Fulham game because of injury, nothing else. And you know, from a selfish point of view, I've mentioned a couple of times, I am really pleased that they're both there. Højbjerg, I think, can do a fantastic job coming off the bench. I know it's not what he thinks he should be doing at this stage in his career. And Lo Celso clearly is skillful and would be a replacement if the worst happens with Maddison. So are we both quite happy that they are still part of the squad?
I'm surprised on their behalf because of the fact that they're both established internationals. As we said before, Lo Celso would have been a World Cup winner, would have been part of that squad, and Højbjerg is a key part of the Danish team. And it's supposed to be a move for him in particular. It just didn't quite transpire, did it? It sounds like Fulham might have had a go right at the end with the Paulinho situation. Maybe didn't fancy that, but I am surprised because I can understand why you're excited, because they're really useful players to have in the squad. Højbjerg in particular, his professionalism is well known and around the Spurs squad, and he's a better player than people give him credit for. You know, people talk about his deficiencies, but that's when the team is relying on him being the creative outlet. If you're not doing that, he has lots to bring to the table. But yeah, I personally, I'm just surprised that they weren't looking to sort of force move because they didn't want to be coming off the bench, as you say. It's good for Spurs.
There are always one or two players, I think, that managers, when they come in, they have big kind of clear outs and they decide this player isn't for me, etc. And Højbjerg and maybe one of those, Postecoglou. There are always one or two that a few months down the line kind of prove themselves, and the manager kind of says, I hold my hands up and say, you know, I would have been happy to, but he proved himself to me. And I just wonder if Højbjerg and Lo Celso, one of them, might be one of those, Postecoglou.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. I think in general terms, we've got to be reasonably satisfied, or I think very satisfied with how the transfer window panned out by getting rid of Sanchez and Ndombele right at the end, a lot of the deadwood has gone. There are players still there, which, you know, hopefully Tom's going to be right and they'll prove to be superstars. Brian Hill's another one. Let's not forget, he's close to fitness again. Benton Kerr's going to be fit again soon. Hey, we've got a wealth of talent. So what are we going to give the manager in terms of marks out of 10 for his start? And, of course, we've got Robbie Williams, everybody else singing his praises. There is that one blot. I have to mention it again in a moment. But Dan, out of 10, are you going to give him full marks?
I'll give him a 9. I think you've got to take the Fulham game into account. I did think it was a miscalculation. I'm a bit more over it than you are, I think it's fair to say. Yeah, I mean, I'm really pleasantly surprised by how quickly everything's taken shape. I was really prepared for a rocky start, not least because Ange himself had said it can take 6 months to a year to get teams up to speed. So I was fully expecting some chaotic early season performances, a lot of kind of tricky results, and then maybe things start to come together in November, even December time. So to be sitting joint second in the table after 4 games, unbeaten, everything coming together very nicely, the club feeling just completely different in so many ways to Conte's Spurs or last season's Spurs, I think you have to give them enormous credit for that. It's just remarkable how speedily everything feels different, you know, from the team to the style, to the mood, to the rhetoric. It almost feels like a completely different club. And I think Ange has driven that, and he's been the main reason for that, clearly. So I think we have to give him big credit.
I did ask you last week whether you could get him to sign the affidavit, just promising that come the third round of the FA Cup, whoever we've got and wherever it is, he will name his strongest side. Did you manage to get that piece of paper signed?
I didn't, Roger. He seemed a bit tetchy, actually, before the Burnley game, so I didn't think it was the time for that.
Oh, you're the man who stands up to Spurs managers. Conte.
I wouldn't say that. I never said boo to most of them.
All right, 9 out of 10. Tom, A?
I take a little bit more into account that defeat, I think, in the cup. I do think, you know, Spurs had 3 competitions, they're down to 2 already. You know, we're not even in the first international break. I thought that was a big error, and there's no point in going back over it. But in the context of where Spurs are at the moment over the last kind of 10, 15 years, I think that was an error of judgment. But equally, if we kind of just push that to one side, you know, let's go back to the kind of key questions that we were asking at the start of the season. You know, can Spurs defend properly under Postecoglou? So far, yes. You know, can they re-establish connection with the fan base? So far, very much so. Can they score enough goals without Harry Kane? You know, and in brackets, get Son playing again. Well, he just scored a hat-trick. They're scoring freely, playing brilliantly. Yes, you know. I mean, these are the kind of key points. And so far, you know, he's ticked all of them. Let's, you know, just put a little bit of caution there. It's 4 games gone. A 10 points out of 12, fine, it's a very good start. But there's a long way to go, you know, and let's see how this squad handles the rest of the season. Let's see how they handle some dips. Let's see how Postecoglou handles some criticism. All these things are still very much to be seen. But no doubt it's been a really, really good start.
So what's that?
What's your mark out of 10?
Yeah. So Dan gave 9. I'm going to give it an extra minus 1.5 for the Ooh. Cup. So how about 7.5?
Such a cop-out.
It's crazy. Well, I mean, if it wasn't for the club, he's getting a 10. He could not have done better than me.
Yeah, but...
Well, 12 out of 12.
Maybe, but you've got to think about what he was coming into. First of all, that pre-season tour was a bit chaotic. One of his games was taken away because of rain. Another game was against not far off it. He had Harry Kane over the not far off it compared to Roma. He had Harry Kane's situation hanging over the whole time, including press conferences, including myself asking questions constantly about it. And he obviously left just before the season started. To change all this quickly, and the run of fixtures hasn't been that easy. Brentford away, I kept going on about how really well about that game, and they were unlucky not to win it. And United, all right. And you can make caveats for some of the opposition not being quite up to speed, but they were excellent against them. And you look at the defence, worried about Porro and Udogi, been fantastic so far. He's had a squad that is absolutely enormous, he's had to whittle down. I mean, apart from the Fulham game, a big caveat, I understand, and it does seem a bit crazy given that they've got hardly any fixtures between now and January. So it is a big downside to me, but I just cannot think of anyone who can have more of a transformative effect in such a short amount of time. And every time he speaks in the press conference, he says he's no perfect, whatever the situation. So far, at least. I mean, I might be going a bit overboard here, but I can't think of a time where I've listened to an answer to one of his questions and gone, I'm not really sure why it's like that. Or he didn't quite get it right. He come away listening to him, often thinking about the game in a different way. And he's transformed the way people view him. He obviously came into it with this Aussie bias that some people have had. He's got over that very quickly.
This is a love ode.
It is a bit of a love ode.
Get a room, mate.
Yeah. But I don't understand how, apart from, again, the Fulham game, why you couldn't look at that one.
So you're giving him 10, are you?
No, I'm going to give him 9 because of that.
Okay. Okay, I'll give him 8.
7.5.
I'm giving him 8. He definitely loses at least 2 points, but I think it was others should have been involved and inspired him to make a different decision on that particular occasion. Now, this will be interesting, and whoever goes last is going to have the toughest, because I want, well, it'll be 4 standout players, but you can't all say Maddison, for example. So, okay, Tom, you gave the best answer just then, I think. So you can go first. Who's been your stand? Oh, sorry, Dan. No, I mean, great answers.
Marcus is in charge.
They were all great answers. They're all great answers. But
his answer was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a good one.
He was taking into account future events which hadn't happened to mark him out of 10 for. Okay, okay.
Mark has been given.
I thought it was a very sensible.
In the future, it all goes wrong.
Just we had so many false dawns before. I think it's important not to get.
Let him go first.
Who's been the standout player in the first 4/5 games?
Okay, if not Maddison, then...
Well, you can have Maddison.
I can have Maddison.
Well, you're going first, so you can.
Okay,
well,
I'm not going to say Maddison. I'm going to say Udogie. I think just the idea of having suddenly a left-back or a full-back generally that can sort of play such a big part in Tottenham's attacking play feels so refreshing suddenly. You know, we Spurs have been hunting this kind of full-back for, I don't know, since... What was the last full-back Spurs had? It was like a Steve Carr, I don't know...
1980s.
Carl Walker and Danny Rose. Yeah, that's fair. But, you know, since those two, you know, they've been looking for this. And I think, you know, that they found one finally. You know, brilliant on the ball, very confident coming inside, playing the way Postecoglou wants to play, creates chances, but also seems like he can defend as well. I think he's been a real revelation so far in all ways.
Yeah. Wouldn't argue with that.
I think it has to be either Bissouma if we're not picking James Maddison, but there are loads that you can pick from. But Bissouma, from where he was last season to the player he is now, he's got a manager who knows exactly what his strengths are. Or, actually, that's disrespectful to Antonio Conte. I'm sure he knew what he was good at. He just didn't want his midfielders to play in that way. But not only does Ange want to play that way, he's also getting the best out of him in the way he's... asking Bissouma to be an example to other players, to take that responsibility. And you can tell it when you watch the games. He's driving the team on. He's setting up attacks. He's been great in the tackle. I think his stats the other day, last one was looking, I'm not sure there'd be many more players who've made more tackles than he has this season so far. And he's been a revelation.
An absolute colossus. Okay, so Doggy's gone. Bissouma's gone. Madison.
Well, no, I've actually said Maddison, so I'll have Maddison. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think for a player who had 19 direct goal involvements in the Premier League last season and was already an England international, he somehow managed to surprise a lot of people, including myself. I didn't actually realise he was this good. And I think he just feels right, doesn't he? He's done an interview to this effect on the eve of the season saying how he feels like a Spurs player and he could see himself as a Spurs player, and that's just exactly how it is to me. I think Spurs should always have a player like James Maddison. He's an entertainer, he's creative, he plays with a smile on his face, he makes the game fun, he makes it exciting, and he's been incredibly effective as well. And it also looks to me like he's relishing the leadership role. He looks like he's at a point in his career, I think he's 26 going on 27, where he is ready to kind of be a proper leader in the dressing room and on the pitch. And he seems to be reveling in that. And I think he's been great. And again, like Bissouma, like the centre halves, he just feels so important to the way Postecoglou wants to play. I'm not convinced that there's anyone in the squad, including Lo Celso, who could fill in for him. I think the speed with which he plays, the speed of thought, his technical qualities, he's so important for kind of breaking down packed defences. And, yeah, I know that Tom's already got a scolding from Ange for saying he was a bargain. But I think we all knew what you were meant. And I think
he
could easily, as I think the other Tom said last week, you know, end up being comfortably the signing of the summer.
And what makes it all the sweeter, the age is important, 26, which meant he was too old to play for Chelsea. I mean, does that club have any idea what it's doing? I sincerely hope not.
Who's yours?
It's because it's the partnership. I can't separate them, but Van de Ven and Romero have been magnificent in the heart of that central defence. If I had to go for one, I'd really struggle. I'd probably just say Van de Ven because he's come in and he's learnt so quickly. But equally, as we've all said, Romero's been brilliant. So I want to just put them as one unit, and long may that partnership continue to flourish. But, you know, there are so many players we could have mentioned, and at least Richarlison finally scored the other day for the first time since, I guess we have to downplay that hat-trick against the pub team now.
That may have been a bit strong.
He's got a hat-trick with Richarlison. Albert's against the Dog and Duck, so it didn't really matter. Now, we've all got the weekend off. Of course, we'll be hard at work fine-tuning this podcast, getting ready for a special. We've got a special which we'll tell you about next week. Tom B's bright ideas. But come September, well, later this month, Sheffield United at home, and then two huge games which might give us a much better idea of how the season's going to pan out. Arsenal away, then Liverpool at home. Just referring to Sheffield United, first of all, on the face of things, what an opportunity to make it 13 points from 15, and who knows, maybe even go to the top of the table. But my mind immediately goes back to the last time we played the Blades, which was in the cup last winter. We all know what happened. And to me, that was the nadir, the point of no return, when that weakened side went out of the FA Cup. So, you know, in some ways, we go into this next game. It really does highlight what an extraordinary transformation there has been in 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, it's a really interesting contrast. That Sheffield United game killed the season, didn't it? I think Kane came out a couple of weeks later and said as much, said it was a hammer blow or something to their hopes. And I think it just killed the dressing
room.
Dagger to the heart, that was it, yeah. Killed the dressing room, killed the mood, killed the fan base. It really was such a low point, I think. And then followed by the AC Milan game, is that right?
Yeah, so Wolves next.
Wolves next, then Milan game. Just a dreadful week. And why Spurs didn't just get rid of Conte after that Milan game, I don't know, but we won't go over that. So, yeah, I mean, the mood couldn't be more different going into the Sheffield United game, assuming Romero comes back from Argentina in one piece instead of the rest of them. And then, obviously, I don't want to look too far ahead because it would be very Spurs to slip up, I suppose, against Sheffield United. But then it's the North London derby, and I think Everton are up next for Arsenal, so you'd fancy them to win that. And obviously, Spurs are the favourites against Sheffield United, so they could both go into that game unbeaten, level on points, both with a really strong start, and that could be such a tasty game. Mm. I don't want to start thinking about it too much, but it's hard not to.
Well, we'll take it game by game, but just briefly looking at our, quote, rivals, and sadly, we have to put Arsenal in the mix, but Manchester City, as far as I'm concerned, given the title now, but the rest of them, Liverpool, and, you know, it's uncertainty over Mo Salah, not necessarily been at their best. I have to say, even, you know, with a neutral eye, that Arsenal, to me, don't look quite as good, certainly at the moment, as they did last season. Chelsea, they're not one of our rivals, are they? Why have I even put them in that list? Manchester United, I mean, typical bloody United, couldn't even hold, thought they got the winner at Arsenal, end up losing at 3-1. They've got issues off the pitch as well. It's all unraveling, perhaps, there a little bit. Newcastle, you know, with the Champions League as well, the draw from hell. Eddie Howe, I notice, is now second favourite after Sean Dyche to lose his job. How quickly the mighty can fall. Villa, been up and down so far. Brentford, still like Brentford a lot, but very, very early days, the two Toms. I know I said best we could hope for was top six before the season started. Now that I look at who's up for those top four places, I am quietly confident that Spurs could finish in the top four. What would you say?
Well, you missed out Brighton.
You
were flying.
I apologise.
And seem like the only ones who have kind of done even better.
I knew I was forgotten expecting one of them, yeah.
But otherwise, I agree with you. I guess always, you know, you kind of look at the end of the summer, you always think that the big teams look even better than the last season. You kind of make a judgment for them on the basis of...
Oh, by the way, Tungo Ndombele's plane just heading off to Turkey. Good luck.
Left a bit late, apparently, surprisingly.
You always think that every team is going to get better, but invariably that's not the case, you know. And I think so far there have been quite a lot of seeds of encouragement for Spurs, you know. They're looking at the rivals. I agree. I think Arsenal and City look like they're going to be pulling away as the top two probably again. But you look at their sort of direct challenges for the sort of third, fourth, fifth place, as it well might be. You know, and all of them look like they have quite significant flaws at the moment. Long way to go, but I think I agree. Early on, encouraging signs for Spurs.
I think Liverpool, like, they've been quite tasty this season. It was a good win the other day. Newcastle win was quite the transformation of the confidence. Yes, you mentioned Salah. If he does go, then that's going to be huge. But I can't be surprised if it does happen. They've got so many options. They've got new signings to bed in. So I think they could be quite competitive this year. Arsenal as well, a bit of a slow start, but still picked up lots of points. And I think they'll be very, very good again. But Man United, I'm not sure about them. I know Rashford's had a bit of a slow start, so he will only get better. And you could say that about most of these teams, that they will only get better. But you could say that about Tottenham as well. But United, I don't know. I'm not sure. I look at their team and go, it should be playing much better than it is, or should far surpass Tottenham's. So they would be the ones that I'd be looking at to really try and chase down.
I'm going to give you my... This is the season. I'll tell you it now, so you can just fast forward to May. This is how the top 10 will look after the final set of fixtures, Dan. And correct me if you...
Top 10?
Yeah, top 10. And actually, 10th place. I'm giving Chelsea 10th place, but actually, only because I can't... I've only listed...
You've not got any written down.
I can't think of any of the sides of the bottom of the table, but it's quite possible they won't even finish in the top 10.
Well, West Ham, top of the table at the moment.
Oh, no. The Hammers, okay. You know, they fly so high, they reach the sky and... Then they fade and die and all the rest of it. Chelsea will be 10th.
Possibly where that was going.
Chelsea will be 10th at best. Brentford will be 9th. Aston Villa will be 8th. Newcastle, with a change of manager, will be 7th. Manchester United will have to make do with 6th place. There'll also be a change of manager at the end of the season at Old Trafford. Brighton will be 5th. Spurs will be 4th. Arsenal 3rd. Liverpool 2nd. And Manchester City 1st.
I'm not going to do my top 10.
But roughly, does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea.
Give or take 10 cups.
Is the answer. I mean, I've actually been to two of the Arsenal games this season, and I would say they haven't convinced me. I think there's a question mark there over whether Arteta's kind of overthought the changes to his midfield. Obviously, Havertz has struggled. But I won't go into too much detail. This isn't an Arsenal pod. I'd be quietly optimistic now after Spurs' start. I mean, one thing that hasn't got nearly as much attention as I thought it would is the fact that fifth place could well be enough for Champions League this season. We won't know for a while. We might not even know till April, apparently, which is kind of a weird situation. But it could well be the case that the Premier League gets an extra spot. And I think with that in mind, at Spurs, you've got to be thinking that there's an opportunity to get straight back in this year.
I also just think one point to make on Chelsea is an interesting one, because we felt all last season that kind of Tottenham's demise was accentuated because Arsenal and Arteta were doing so well. I just wondered if Chelsea were kind of flying at the top of the table right now, playing brilliantly with Pochettino in the dugout, whether that would have slightly just diminished the kind of enthusiasm right now for Spurs. If Spurs were not doing quite so well. As it is, it's completely the opposite. You know, Spurs are flying. Chelsea and Pochettino are really struggling, and nobody is talking right now and saying, why on earth did we not hire Pochettino? And for now, they're kind of riding that wave of faith in Ange, but also enthusiasm. And I think, you know, whilst that carries on, that will also help.
Yeah, I think, what's exciting from the top point of view is the more they get used to Ange Ball and all these new signings and players who haven't really featured much, like Basuma, it's going to get more exciting. But I guess the one caveat is it's quite a young team. And when they have a setback, they have a bad result, which will eventually happen, you think. It's how they react. And that's not to say that they weren't a bit well, particularly with their manager, but often with younger players, you can have a bit of a knock-on effect. So we'll see if that challenge comes along, how they react.
I think the one thing that will help them in that regard, and I agree with you at some point, sooner or later, and it could be soon, I mean, the Arsenal-Liverpool games will be tough, but as long as they continue to play in this new refreshing style, I don't think the fans are going to give them too much stick, which should help them to bounce back the following week. I think that's actually quite an aspect here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think before the start of the season, we were all saying results weren't the most important thing. It was to see progress on the pitch and to have a style and approach that everyone could believe in. so far we've got that, but we've also got the results. So we've kind of been spoiled. But certainly the results won't last forever. You know, obviously Spurs aren't going to be able to maintain this form indefinitely. There will be some setbacks. And I think exactly as you said, as long as they're still doing the right things, as long as they're still entertaining, as long as it looks like they're still moving in the right direction, which I'm sure it will, then I think fans are going to be forgiving to those blows when they come.
What's also quite exciting is that last year, when those blows came, it's not often, it all just seemed to fall on Harry Kane to get them out. Mm.
That's because last year, when there's not a star you can get behind, it was all about results. There was just way too much pressure on the result every week. Mm. And it was just win or bust. Because right. There was nothing beyond that. And now there is something beyond that.
I agree. But also those players are stepping up as well within that system. The philosophy he's bringing in. But already, you know, we've had, as we've said, so many different goal scorers that when that happens, you know, you're not, as I say, not relying on one player to dig them out of the mile all the time. So that's very encouraging.
Very encouraging. And I think it almost rounds up our pod for this week. We've got the AGM. We're going to head next door now and sit down, go through the minutes, listen to all the pods that we've done over the past 6 months, pick out the occasional errors. But as I said at the start of today's show, do get in touch with us. Tweet us at the Tottenham Way and get in touch in all sorts of ways. I mean, you're the social media expert, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, you can tweet us at the Tottenham Way. Please give us a review. Please rate us. I think I'm really not the expert on this.
Sounding like the expert at all.
Leave a comment, I guess.
You can leave a comment. Yeah. Let us know. And
what sort of comment? Just a good sign.
I didn't expect this to fall on me, I've got to say.
Anyway, get in touch, basically. Tell us what you think. And we will endeavor to deliver. And actually, just before we go, we are going to this. We've got to ratify this at our very important AGM. But once a month, we're going to have. And ask the you ask us a question.
Ask pod. The panel.
Ask the panel. Yeah, you see, we haven't actually got the wording down here in the minutes, but yeah,
such a polished pod.
So polished.
Smash this one.
So polished until
we'll edit this one.
Once a month, we want you to set the agenda. So we'll have more details on that. And next week, because of course, we won't have a game to review this weekend. Tell us quickly, Tom, you had this moment of inspiration midway through your third bottle of red wine last night. So what are we doing next week?
Okay, how best to explain it? So, some of you who play fantasy football might be aware of how to do a draft system where we all pick a team. I'm using that idea and sort of, you know, when one player goes and none of the other teams can select that player. I'm using that idea to go through a period in Spurs' recent history. I'm not sure when, but a sort of 5-year period over the last 20 years where probably you three guys will pick a team in that sort of way. And then you can sort of enjoy the nostalgia of looking back at some of those glory or not so glorious years of Spurs.
Oh, I've got you. So basically, the best 11 players, say, between the start of the 2004-05 season right. And the 2008-09 season.
Once,
something like that.
Yeah, but once like Gareth Bale's gone, then you've got to be left with what other midfielders are available. And it could have some, and we'll sort of look at the teams at the end of it. And I think it'd be quite.
I like choose one manager as well, I guess, from that.
Yes,
period.
There are four managers during that period, if that's the period we're.
Could we do like this century?
No, because I think if we enjoy it, and I want to do another one.
Yeah,
so, I see. Okay.
It's not going to come up with any other ideas. One's got to run for a few
Let's
weeks.
See how this
weeks.
Goes. Then...
Okay, that's great. So we'll be doing that next week. But in the meantime, leave that comment. And from me, Marcus Buckland, from Tom Barkley, the son, from Tom Allnut of The Times, and from Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard, enjoy this glorious weather while it lasts. And of course, come on, you Super Spurs.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.